When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Ah, can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Harrington deal. Chris Harrington joins me now. Chris, what are you listening to?
That is Happy by the Rolling Stones from Exile Main Street. The rare Keith Richards lead vocal. Keith Richards, somehow 81 years old today. Sending that out to the Milwaukee Bucks, basking in the glow of their NBA Cup triumph.
Not just the Bucks, but you got two Torian Prince and Darvin Ham, back to back Cup champions. Now, where are you?
They're like the Robert Horry, Derek Fisher of the NBA Cup. Yeah.
So when we last spoke, you were lamenting that you didn't have any way to watch this, and Jeffrey was telling you how to go get a digital antenna. Were you able to watch it, and if so, how did you achieve that?
Yeah, Jeffrey's my tech shaman, man. I went to Target.
If it comes to watching sports on TV, I'm your guy.
That's right. I pumped down $25 for a digital antenna, and I hooked it up. And I don't know why I never thought of this before. Like, back in the summer, I got, like, Hulu Live TV for a while because I wanted to watch the NBA Finals and, you know, other stuff like that, and I got rid of it. And now, well, I just got this, man. I'm good for the Oscars. I'm good for the Super Bowl if I want to watch that. I'm good for all the stuff.
And you can just watch network TV, too, is that right? If you ever work, whatever, you want to watch ABC Nightly News, you can watch that now.
No, it's the broadcast channel. So I watched it, you know, the local KSTP or whatever, the local ABC affiliate in the Twin Cities, you know?
Well, that's good. We're a full-service radio station here. Jeffrey is happy to oblige. Glad you could watch it. What did you observe? I was at the school board meeting, and then I was watching the football game. I did not see 1 second of last night's Bucks triumph.
I mean, Giannis is just awesome now on offense, especially. I don't think he has not been as great defensively as he's been in the past, but like he is, you know, he is so overwhelming that he is like a top three minimum two or three player in the world, and he's playing like it. I think that team has sort of gotten over their early funk and they've sort of gotten themselves together a little bit. In terms of last night, I mean, part of the difference is, like, the shooting from the supporting cast, right? Like, Gary Trent and whatever the guy, the Derry Bird guy's name, real name is, came off the bench and both hit, like, three threes. And so, you know, Giannis got some shot making from the supporting cast, and the Thunder didn't. But also, Giannis was awesome, and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander wasn't. And that was sort of that, you know?
And how have the Bucks turned around? They've gone from 2-8. And now, last game didn't count in this, but they have won 13 of their last 16, I believe. That's right, 13 of their last 16.
Yeah.
What have they done?
I mean, I'd have to take a closer look game by game to what's going on there, but I mean, they did make a starting lineup change that I think has helped their defense and injected some athleticism. Andre Jackson, who was a rookie they drafted a couple years ago, who's more of a chaos agent defensive type, is starting instead of Gary Trent Jr., who's sort of a spot-up shooter who doesn't really do much else. So they've gotten a little bit more athleticism there. I just think they found better chemistry. They've sort of settled down and, like, you know, that team, I don't think that team has the depth of talent. I know they've had a better record over the last 15 games or whatever than, like, Boston and Cleveland. I don't think they're a team on that level, even though Giannis is the best player in the conference. But, you know, they settled down and Giannis is playing an MVP level and they just tightened things up and they're playing a lot better. And so, you know, they might be the third or fourth best team in the East.
When you say Boston and Cleveland at that level, do you put them at the same level or do you have Boston at one level and then Cleveland?
I feel a little bit better about Boston when you're thinking about the playoffs. I'm just talking about the depth of talent. When you're talking about, like, you know, what's your 8-9-man rotation in a playoff series? Like, I just think Boston definitely, but also Cleveland are just more solid top to bottom in terms of what they're going to put on the floor than Milwaukee. But again, Giannis is the best player. Milwaukee is going to have the best player in every playoff series they play unless they get to the NBA Finals against Denver.
And what did you observe about Oklahoma City? And by the way, so we look at Oklahoma City with some fear and trembling because of not just what they have, but then also their resources going forward. But what they were able to do this summer, all of that, the way they're able to augment because of their resources. Are they some rising colossus or are they?
You know, it's interesting. I do think that they are not unlike the Grizzlies. If you throw out the gap year and like the year and a half of troubles and just look at what the Grizzlies had been when you extract that from it, I think the Thunder to this point are not totally unlike the Grizzlies in that they've got a team that is proven it can rack up wins in the regular season, but they have not proven it in the playoffs. They are still on the young side. And again, I think Shai Gilgeous-Alexander should rank ahead of Ja Morant in any player ranking. In fact, when I submitted my ESPN thing, and I think they're going to do this tomorrow, maybe whatever Tim Bontemps calls it, his straw poll for the MVP. Like, I actually had – I struggled with the top three, which I think you could put in any order, and I actually put Shai Gilgeous-Alexander first. I texted him during the game and said, hey, let me get a do-over on that. And I did have him first. And so I think in the totality of what guys have done the first 25 games, I sort of had him by a hair over Jokic and Giannis. But if you're just thinking about who the best players are, which is separate from the MVP thing, he is not as good as those two guys. And so Oklahoma City has an all-NBA level player, just like Memphis does, but not a guy who has proven he can put a team over the top in the playoffs, you know, against these guys who have really done it. And so I think the Thunder are more solid than the Grizzlies, but I think they're not totally unlike each other in terms of like what they've proven in the regular season and what they have not proven in playoff level basketball.
And so, they're doing where the MVP race
they
stands
do this
now.
Every year they do this three or four times around during the season, and Bontemps just ask various media people he knows around the league like what their top five MVP vote would be. So that went out like 2 days ago or whatever. I think they'll probably publish it tomorrow, I'm guessing.
Okay, so those are your top three. They want five?
Yeah, I went SGA, Jokic, Giannis, and I really agonized. I mean, my tiebreaker was at the moment that I voted, SGA had played 25 games, Jokic had played 20. And the five-game difference within 25 games is like 20%. I felt like that was pretty meaningful at this point. And Giannis just has not been great defensively like he used to be. And then they just got off to a poor start. And like the early games matter too. But I sort of gave SGA the edge over those two, even though I think they're better players. But to me, that was a clear top three. And then to me, Tatum is a clear four. And there's a handful of guys you could put fifth. I put Luka fifth.
If no one had an MVP previously, would you have done it differently? In other words, did that weigh in at all?
No, because again, this is not a prediction of what's going to happen at the end of the season. Right. It's not a final vote. It is a snapshot in time. And I just thought the totality, the consistency of what SGA had done for 25 games, what the team is doing, the fact that they're doing it without Chet Holmgren, who I think is their second best player, and then you throw in the missed games from Jokic and the poor start from Giannis. I just gave SGA a slight edge in an MVP power ranking.
Right.
But, again, I do not think he's a better player than those two guys.
All right, the other news that broke yesterday was the All-Star format is changing again. Tell us what they're going to do.
I don't even know. I mean, I think is there something new?
Go ahead, Jeffrey. No,
but is there something new yesterday? I thought that news came out a couple weeks ago.
So yesterday was the news broke earlier during the year that they were going to do this. This was the announcement,
yeah,
and this is a pet peeve of mine that they we repackaged stuff we've already known.
We've known it, but yeah. now it's official.
Okay.
Right.
That was easy. So they're breaking it into four teams, but one of the teams is like the G League guys, or is that the G League guys? It's the rookie sophomores. Is that right?
I'll be honest. I was at the school board meeting, and then I had Memphis football. Okay. My strategy today was to ask Chris what the hell is going on. That was my strategy.
I stopped talking because it sounded like my phone went out. I thought I was off the air for a second.
No, you're good.
So they're taking the All-Star team, which is 24 players, right? If I understand it. The All-Star team was 24 players total. They're breaking that into three teams of eight, and then there's a fourth team of eight that I think is going to be from the rookie sophomores. And they're going to play some tournament style like thing with two semifinal games and a final game. I hate piling on the NBA because that's what all people do now. It's like everything the NBA does is bad, and how can we fix it? And I think it gets overboard sometimes. But this is just too complicated. And like I don't think it's imperative that the All-Star game be fixed. The All-Star games are bad. All the All-Star games are bad. Like, why would you watch the Pro Bowl? Why would anyone?
They're
do
all
that,
bad.
You know,
100%.
Yeah, and so like whatever. I don't care that much. To me, it's not like an emergency situation that the All-Star games not exist.
No, you don't even watch it.
Why would anyone watch it?
At least, honestly, in the baseball All-Star game, also bad. Now, the confrontation between the pitcher and the hitter has integrity, right? The pitcher is trying to throw it past him, and the hitter's trying to hit it, and that is almost identical, maybe some degree of level of focus to what it is in a real game. Whereas in the NBA, that confrontation, defender is not the same.
Still, I haven't watched a baseball All-Star game in a long time, but when I was a kid, and I was a big baseball fan, baseball card guy. I can tell you the 24-man, 26-man, or whatever roster for every team. I can tell you who the fourth reliever was, the backup catcher, like all that, right? Yep. When I was a kid, my favorite thing about the All-Star game was the player introductions.
It was great.
And all the All-Stars come out, and they're wearing their uniforms. Yep. That's one thing I would change. Put them back in their team uniforms. You know, do solids and whites or whatever for differentiation, but have them wear their actual team uniforms in the All-Star game, which they used to do. I would just go back to East-West and have them wear their real uniforms and have a good time celebrating the players, and then if the game's bad, that's fine. I'll turn and watch something else. You know?
The NHL at some point, and maybe, I don't know if they still are doing it, they did some version of this. They broke it into little
teams.
I lose track of who's doing what in All-Star games because, like, I don't really care. And I guess people said it was kind of more successful, but no one cares in that one. Either. Do you remember the last time you clearly remembered caring about baseball All-Star games, although mostly the introductions? Obviously, when Magic came back after his HIV diagnosis, that was a memorable All-Star game. Yeah, I don't know if I remember many since. Like, you know, Powell and Mark tipping off against each other was a nice moment. What do you remember?
There was some All-Star game, and maybe it was like the year Mutombo got traded from Atlanta to Philly or vice versa or something. But there was some All-Star game, and I want to say Mutombo was involved, and Iverson and Marbury, where it got like super competitive in the fourth quarter. And like it was great, and everyone was really amazed. The players were like looking around in amazement, like they just witnessed like, you know, the birth of Christ or something. And like, you know, and I remember that being like really memorable, and like that's kind of about it.
Yeah, they could just make them and then take. You can make the All-Star team and then you head off to the Bahamas or wherever. By the way, they need more coaches now because they need four coaches. So they're going to have both the head coach and an assistant from the best teams. They're not going to force the number two team. Let's say the Grizzlies are second in the West. Taylor's not getting in. He's going to be forced to be away from his family or schlep his family to All-Star Central to coach one of these four teams. They're going to use an assistant, evidently, from the best team in the West and the East to do that. All right, speaking of best, the New York Times, was it top 25 things this food critic ate in 2024? And one of those things is eatable right here in Memphis?
I don't think it was just one writer. I think it was multiple writers who contributed to that. I think the guy who wrote the Memphis Barber was a guy named Brett Anderson, who I'm familiar with. Been familiar with for a long time. He used to be a New Orleans guy. I think he was an Alt Weekly guy back in the day. But I don't think there was one writer. I don't think.
I see.
But Memphis did appear on the list, and it was the corn mash and the lobbyist, which like the lobbyist is great and the corn mash is great, but I don't even think it's the best corn dish at the lobbyist. So great
really?
For them.
What's the tell me about the corn mash and what's the best corn dish?
The best thing I ate in Memphis this year, and we're going to have a piece in the Daily Memphian. I don't know. I've already written my parts. I don't know when they're publishing it. It's probably this week or next week. But it's going to be different writers talking about the best thing they ate in Memphis this year. And this is not what I wrote about because someone else had already taken it. So I ended up writing about something different. So I wrote about like my second favorite thing or whatever I ate. But my favorite thing I ate, which I think Kristen Yates is going to write about in the story, are the corn ribs at The Lobbyist. And I don't, that may be seasonal. So I don't know if it's on the menu right now. It may be more of a summery kind of thing. But the corn ribs are, it's like whole, like corn on the cob, but you cut into sections, you know, into like ribs, and they're like doused in this Calabrian chili oil with blistered tomatoes, and that is delicious.
Delicious. Is it a,
so good.
Is it an entree? Is it an appetizer? What is it, a small plate?
I mean, I think it's
splittable.
You know, I think it's on the whatever they call the appetizer section. But to me, The Lobbyist is a place where you just get a bunch of stuff and share it, and you're right. All digging into different plates. That's just not – that's the way to me that – in fact, I've never even ordered an entree, The Lobbyist. I've only been there twice, but we've never even ordered an entree. We just ordered all, like, you know, vegetable
that's
and
the right way to order.
Stuff.
I sort of feel
in.
Like it's the best way to order everywhere. I mean, I guess. Even if
yeah.
I – you know, like, who wants to just eat one thing, you know?
Right.
Like, I'll have my plate. It's like my dogs. They have their plate, and they protect
it. Oh, I love
it. No,
a tasting menu.
Yeah, whatever, yeah. Okay, and then
the corn mash is great too, and that is the thing that's become sort of their signature.
And what is that? What is corn mash?
It's like almost a grits like sort of mash, you know, corn thing, but it's got like roasted squash and bacon and other stuff going on there. It's very good.
You also wrote about films that are in town, I take it from what you wrote. Mufasa, The Lion Kings, which is the prequel, I guess that's coming out. You have not seen it, right?
It is the I mean, I'm not super surprised because the kind of movie it is, but it is like directed by Barry Jenkins. It's probably the most prominent like end of year movie that was not made available because I've seen almost everything at this point because I'm in a critics group, and so I've seen The Brood List, and I've seen A Complete Unknown, and I've seen Baby Girl, and I've seen all this stuff that hasn't opened yet. That Mufasa was not made available, and so like whatever. It would have been high on my priority list anyway, other than I guess writing about it because it opened. But not my thing. It's wild that it's directed by Barry Jenkins, the guy who did Moonlight, which won Best Picture a few years ago. But you know, it's a like they call it photorealistically animated. It's like animated lions who look like real lions, but they're talking. It's not my thing, you know.
You did say there's a new Eastwood film, not in theaters.
Yeah, it got a very small theatrical release earlier in the year, never showed in Memphis theaters, and didn't show hardly anywhere in theaters. It's going straight to HBO Max on Friday, or I guess they just call it Max now. And I think it's one of the better movies of the year. Like, spoiler alert, it'll be on my top 10 list, which I'll publish either later this week or early next week. And it's called Juror Number 2. Clint Eastwood's 94 years old now.
That's amazing.
Still directing movies. He's not acting in this one, but he directed it. It's called Juror Number 2. And it's kind of, I describe it as like, sort of like a little bit 12 Angry Men, a little bit Alfred Hitchcock, a little bit John Grisham. Like, it is a courtroom drama. And I don't want to say any more about it because the twistiness and... I watched it once on my own, and I watched it a second time with my wife because she hadn't seen it. And she literally had no idea it even existed, which... Like, to have that level of innocence to watch a movie is
that's
an amazing thing.
Yeah.
So I encourage people to watch this movie and not know anything about it if they don't already or not know anything more than they already do. And it's a very easy watch. It's a very directly entertaining movie. Like, it's sort of in the general vein of you think of those popular John Grisham movies from the 90s or whatever. It sort of operates kind of like that, but with a little bit more maybe sort of moral complexity to it in that sort of Hitchcockian kind of way. It's really, really good, and I think most people would like it.
You said you've seen A Complete Unknown. That's the Bob Dylan film. What'd you think?
We can talk about that next week. It's going to open in Memphis for Chris.
We'll have next Monday to talk, Chris. That's it, by the way. I was going to let you know.
We can talk about it later this week.
Okay, we'll talk about it later this week. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it. Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. Talk to him about the Dylan film and more later this week. Year's running out, Jeffrey. Just
you blink and it's over.
Just you blink. and it's over. Also running out, time to get your sweetheart something beautiful for Christmas. And that's why Robert Urban Jewelers is there and has been there, by the way, for nearly five decades. Came down from New York and are like, you know what? This is better. Let's cast our lot here in Memphis. And so for five decades, and we talk about Connor, we talk about Jeffrey. I'll tell you some of the beautiful things I've bought at Robert Irwin Jewelers. Don't want to spill the beans. It's a place you walk in there, and if you're getting an engagement ring, they'll walk you through the process. It is you're a little nervous maybe shopping for an engagement ring. It's a big deal. They're passionate about diamonds. They don't think you have to give up one of your organs in order to buy a diamond ring. In fact, when I was in there the other day, they were telling me that they literally sell as many lab-grown diamonds as mined diamonds now. But they'll walk you through it. And then you got the guarantee, which is the 365-day return policy. If for any reason you're not happy, and mind you, you'll be happy, she'll be thrilled, but that gives you a peace of mind when you embark on this momentous purchase. But anything else you want to buy in there, absolutely stunning sparkle for the Christmas season. They've got locations throughout Memphis. I go to the ones I've said, across from Novels on Perkins Extended or rijewelers.com. Sam Hardiman joins us when we return. It is the Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's James Kell from the Sleeper King Football Podcast. In fantasy football, sleepers can win you championships, and that's why I am here. Every episode is just 15 to 20 minutes long, every Tuesday through Friday. Subscribe to the Sleeper King Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Joined now by Sam Hardiman from the Daily Memphian. By the way, if you want to give, we've had on the show today, we've had John Martin, who writes columns for the Daily Memphian. We've had Chris Harrington, who writes for the Daily Memphian. And now Sam Hardiman, who writes for the Daily Memphian. If you want to give the Daily Memphian as a gift, you can go to dailymemphian.com/gifts to purchase it. And the recipient will receive a code to redeem on the site for either 3 months or a year or whatever. Like, what? It's the perfect for a Memphian who either lives here or a Memphian who now lives elsewhere. Perfect way to keep up with everything that is going on and a lot of fun. So there you go, dailymemphian.com/gifts. Sam Hardiman does join me now. He writes about the city. And yesterday, Sam, you posted a poem on Twitter. I'm going to read it. Here you go. It's called The City. Not by her houses neat, nor by her well-built walls, not yet again, neither by dock nor street, a city stands or falls, but by her men. Not by the joiner's skill, nor work in wood or stone comes good to her or ill, but by her men alone. Why did you post that yesterday? Where is that poem, and why did you post it yesterday?
So first I want to say that the poem is inscribed in City Hall. You can look out if you want to go to my Twitter/X pages, inscribed inside under the awning of the marble of Memphis City Hall. And so every time I enter the building, because I enter, you know, as regular people do, through the front door, not through the garage, like employees do, I see it. And so I often think about it and think about that we write, and we cover, and y'all certainly at school board last night covered, you know, what the first draft of history and what the people of the place, because, you know, it's written by Alcius. And so it's, you know, a little date in the sense of, you know, I think men. Today it would be women and men, it would be humanity, right?
Yes, exactly.
But by our actions, by people, a place will rise and fall. And I always just think about that. And because, like, our job is to chronicle the actions of others and to chronicle what's happening in our city. And so I just think about that. And
a city, yeah, a city
I will
is
close
not,
it in on 6 years yeah. of me being here or more.
A city is not just buildings and streets and the river flowing past. A city is ultimately what the people who live in the city and who run the city make it. And it does seem like between the county clerk's dispute, between the at least we still have an interim police chief, between the possible change now yet again of school superintendent and what you wrote about today, which is what's going on at MATA, it seems like a tumultuous time in leadership in this city. No?
It's certainly not boring.
Certainly not boring.
I would say I don't know if it's tumultuous. I want to because like that implies that there's this like chaos and we're on this wave and it's cresting and it's about to crash upon the shore, right? And I don't think that's where Memphis is from like my seat as someone who covers it. And you know, I think what you're seeing, for example, we'll take MATA, you know, which is what I have the expertise in right now.
Tell us what's going on at MATA. Tell us what happened last night.
Yeah, I mean, what's happening is the city of Memphis right now is the sole funder of the Memphis Area Transit Authority. But the Memphis Area Transit Authority is not a city of Memphis division, okay? So the mayor of Memphis, Paul Young, does not have, like, administrative power over the place. He can't direct it like he can the police department or the public works department, et cetera. And so what has happened is he recently, we've spoken about this before, replaced the board. He wholly revamped the Memphis Area Transit Authority board, installed 9 new people on there, okay? Mm-hmm. And then he came to them last week, his administration came to them last week and essentially said, we would like you to take the consultants that wrote the scathing report that precipitated you being placed on the board. This report, we released this report the same day that we placed all of you on the board. We would like you to take these consultants, and we're going to pay for it because we pay in, you know, the subtext was we pay for everything around here right now. And we would like you to install them at the top of the organization. And so what the board, MATA board voted to do yesterday is essentially voted to start work on a contract among them, the city of Memphis, and this consulting firm, Transpro, with some other other parties thrown in here. I'm not going to get into all the LLCs that are involved here. And essentially, 3 people are going to be running the Memphis Area Transit Authority. The current interim CEO, Sarah Feldman, will be moved to her former role of deputy CEO, which she had before she was the interim earlier this year when Gary Rosenfeld retired. And so what really is happening here is this sort of long, I don't want to call it a takeover, but probably is a takeover. So this long, very deliberate takeover, potentially, by the Young administration of the Memphis Area Transit Authority as it pours millions of dollars more into the Memphis Area Transit Authority to try to keep it afloat.
Will this cost significant additional money?
It's going to cost taxpayers, if this all gets voted in and the board votes again to accept this contract, $1.3 million more, which this is an entity with a budget that is, you know, 60-something million dollars, depending on the year, $80 million some years. Like, it's not huge, but it's more taxpayer money. It is more money that the city of Memphis is probably taking from the general fund to work on the bus system, which is not a city division, but the city of Memphis is really beginning to treat it as such.
I'm curious, by the way, the story said, and you just said that they're the sole funder. How was it fund? Like, where did does so, that yeah, include bus fare? They have their own funding, of course. They sell seats on the bus, right?
Tickets. Advertising. Yeah, that is a very small amount of money. Matta doesn't make any money, real money from that. Right. It's about $3 million a year. It doesn't cover really any expenses.
And then where's the rest of it come from? State? Where did it used to come from?
I mean, the state and federal government have given money to Matta in the past. Given the situation right now at Matta and the ambiguity on what finances can be used where, the city of Memphis essentially has stepped in and said, you know, essentially the only operating funds Matta has used so far this year are its fare box revenue, its ads, the stuff it gets from ads, and then the $30 million subsidy the city of Memphis gave it this year. And so that is what, and so by sole funder, they're not entirely a sole funder. It's probably 80-90%, but this is the money driving the car, because there's just a lot of lack of clarity as to where, what Matta can do is other tax revenue that it gets for.
Is the idea here that the consultants will be installed to run the thing to sort of set it on the right path and then step away? This isn't permanent, I take it, right?
That is what they are saying. That is, you know, their contract, you know, which they agreed to with the city before they really ever started this work, right? Says that this is about an 8-month process, and then what happens next is that there still may be some oversight, and you know, their contract says it could last until 2026. We'll see. But the consultant, John Lewis of Transport, has stated that he does not plan to be here forever, and that at some point there will be a future decision made about who actually runs this organization.
Okay. So then the other thing you wrote about, and I hate to even, in some ways I'm reluctant to even, because it's so complicated, but the politics between something called More for Memphis. Can you try to explain to us, like we're idiots, what More for Memphis is and what's going on here?
Okay, so this is really complicated.
I know! That's my hesitation.
This is like trying to explain the NFL to like an alien, Jeff. So, essentially, for a long period of time, some community organizations, including a nonprofit called Seeding Success, have worked on an anti-poverty plan that is intended to, you know, make, you know, for make it really quick for people. It's to make it easier for people to climb the economic ladder. It's to make kids read better, to have better educational attainment, so they get better jobs and have better lives, right? That's the goal of this plan. Okay, it's a very long plan. You can Google More for Memphis, 630 pages on the internet. What they need in order to implement this plan and use local public tax dollars to do it is they need to set forth what is called a fiscal agent. This fiscal agent, essentially, think of a third party that the government writes a check to, private philanthropy writes a check to, that party holds this money, okay? What's going on with this is at the same time, Seeding Success's CEO, Mark Sturgis, is also the treasurer of a 501c4, which can make political donations and has a PAC, the Tennessee Prosperity PAC, which has given more than $300,000 in local elections in the past 2.5 years, okay? And so as Seeding Success is pitching this ordinance, they are pitching people who they have given political donations. And I want to be very clear, this happens in Memphis all the time. I'm not saying there's anything illegal about it. This article is just simply pointing out that this is a large amount of money in Memphis politics, and as, you know, this group is pitching this ordinance, which was paused yesterday and will be voted on potentially in February. They've given a lot of money in Memphis politics to the very people that could be voting on the ordinance. And so that is, in a nutshell, what More for Memphis is.
How much private money, how much public money? In other words, if Seeds for Success just wanted to give philanthropically to schools to lift them out of, to kids to lift them out of poverty, organizations to help lift kids out of poverty, they could do that. They only need this fiscal agent, I guess that's what the word, because there's also going to be public money involved? Is it
yes,
county it money, is. City money? And do we have any idea of the sums?
City and county tax dollars. And to be clear, Seeding Success is working on behalf of outside philanthropy, a group called Blue Meridian Partners, which is, you know, has anti-poverty measures. And you know, this would be hundreds of millions of private dollars, but it would be essentially 20% private dollars in Seeding Success. And the More for Memphis plan would call for using about $1 billion of existing public dollars, you know, so four public dollars to probably every one private dollar here, should be implementing some of these programs, which are, for example, like some of these are government positions or chronic absenteeism clerks, somebody who pays attention if little Johnny and little Susie hasn't come to school in a while. Okay, that sort of thing. Like, that's what we're talking about here, using that public money and having, you know, essentially a plan that uses all this money together instead of different governments using these very similar, filling similar functions but not working together. And so that's, but yes, to your point, Jeff, the reason you need this fiscal agent is because you are going to rely heavily on public dollars that exist today that you and I and everyone else in Shelby County pay.
Is there pushback then, or is some of the political complexity here that most public officials would be reluctant to give up public dollars that would then be under the control of a organization that is not them, you know, right? That is that the money is then being directed or deployed by a private organization.
So what I would say is there's really been kind of, I would say, fringe pushback. Like, there's been some outspoken public comment who have, you know, sort of essentially asserted this as a conspiracy to take over for government. And, you know, that's not exactly the case here. At the same time, in these votes that have come up with the Shelby County Commission and the Memphis City Council, there's been skepticism from some members of the body. There are also, I would say, there are public officials who have been quietly skeptical of this and sort of are wondering, are they committing themselves to using future funds? And they're really not. But using, like, essentially signing away tax dollars, future tax dollars, and they're not yet, and you don't sign away the tax dollars until you appropriate them. But it is interesting to see that, like, people have been skeptical of this because it seems to be taking on and almost a way of backdooring into consolidating some functions of government among all the governments.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, that we appreciate. Now explain football to me, and then we'll be okay. Thank you, Sam. I appreciate it. Sam, by the way, this is your last appearance on this show of 2024. So I want to thank you because we're not on next week. And, we're on Monday, but then we're not on, and we're not on the last week of December. And so we return in 2024. Express my gratitude for you for joining us all these many Wednesdays, and look forward to doing it again in 2025.
Well, thank you, Jeff. I was wondering if that was the case. And, yeah, I'll see everybody or listen to everybody or whatever in 2025.
Maybe the Sabres will have won a game by then. Thanks, Sam.
Unlikely.
Unlikely. Unlikely. Thanks, Sam. Appreciate it. Sam Hardiman. They're up to 11 straight losses now. I can't avoid it. I'm trying to avoid it. I can't avoid it. They're up to, my team has lost 11 freaking straight games. Maybe that's why I'm less willing to totally discount Memphis Tiger football winning games, because sometimes winning games in certain contexts is deeply unfamiliar.
Maybe it's the 11 number. It's like maybe you're thinking 11 losses.
NFL could be playoffs wins. Almost here. Not too late to get in on. It's true. NFL playoffs almost here. It's not too late to get in on regular season action with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Right now, new customers finish the season strong with about $250 in bonus bets if your first $5 bet wins. $250 in bonus bets if your first measly $5 bet wins. If you wait, did you win on Memphis football? You got
it. I got a good number.
You got a good number. There were some bad numbers out there, though, that would have irritated you. That would have irritated. They might have applauded you, Ryan, trying to cover there. I don't know.
Like, I mean, listen, there are heroes out there that was glad he was kicking the field goal.
He was trying to kick that field goal. Needed those 3 points. Needed to get from 5 to 8. Anyway, win a $5 bet. And you get $250 in bonus bets if you're a new customer over at FanDuel. Go to FanDuel.com/Calkins, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, for your chance to win $250 in bonus bets. Must be 21 or older. Present in Tennessee. First online real money wager. Only $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable. Bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call Tennessee Redline 1-800-889-9789. Back in a minute. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. Back on the Jeff Calkins Show, Kirk Cousins benched. Jeffrey, what do you think?
I mean, to certainly act like his level of play has been good enough, I think, discounting.
It's been horrific.
I still think it's ballsy. They're still in it.
They are still in it.
I mean, you're turning it over to a rookie, and I believe
it is interesting. If the rookie is good, they got ripped for drafting the rookie, right? If the rookie, I don't think Kirk Cousins stinks because they drafted the rookie. Do you? Nothing. One that does not. Why don't like one thing?
No,
has anything
because
to
he
do
was
with,
even playing well at various points this year. I think Kirk Cousins is hurt.
So, to me, that has nothing to do with it. So, if in the end the rookie is good, all of a sudden, that decision to draft the rookie, which people pummeled last when it happened, will look pretty smart.
I think it's also fair to point out when the Falcons drafted Michael Penix Jr., they knew the medicals of Kirk Cousins.
But then should they sign Kirk Cousins? That's the question. Like, you're going to have to eat the money on Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins has $65 million in dead cap if they let him go. By the way, again, congratulations to Seth Hennigan, who did a remarkable thing, playing 4 years for the University of Memphis. As it happens, I went back and found a column that I wrote before his sophomore season where I wrote that Seth Hennigan is going to be scary good. But what's amazing in this column, as I'm back looking at it, and I've tweeted it out. You can go read it over there. I think it's free, actually. Even then, he was talking about how he didn't transfer, you know, whatever. Like, yep. There was even talk then that people were coming after him because he'd had a very good freshman year. And Ryan Silverfield said this. He believes in the system. I think he believes in me. He believes in this university, this program. He believes in his brothers. He's here. He wants to be here. His goal is to go compete for a championship. Okay, that didn't happen. And then he said this. He's going to graduate from the University of Memphis and hopefully have an illustrious career after that. So before his sophomore year, Ryan Silverfield told you that he was going to graduate from, that Seth Hennigan was going to graduate from the University of Memphis, play here 4 years, nailed it. Now, that was an improbable prediction then, and that was before the portal went nuts. And dude did it. And props to him for staying the course. An all-time Tiger, unquestionably. Jeffrey, what is coming up next on 92.9?
Jeff, here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. Norton Hurd will join them today. Kevin Cerrito joins me on Jeffrey Wright and Company. CJ Hurt will join us during hour number two. Cobb will be with Connor and George this afternoon at 5.
Thanks for listening, buddy. We got to get out of here. Back tomorrow for now. Work is done.